Hey, my name is Akash Thakkar, and this is Sound Business. This is the podcast where we dive into the mindsets and methods of some of the top musicians, sound designers, or audio creators in the world. We're going to interview everyone from plugin makers, performing musicians, video game composers, and everything in between, and learn how they run a successful business and how they're making a killer living in the worlds of music and sound. My hope with this podcast is that you can be exposed to the many myriad different ways there are to make a killer living in the world of music and sound, and help you realize that there's no one right way to get to the top. And with that, let's get into the episode. My guest today is Aaron Sheroff, who's a composer based in Seattle. Aaron has been composing for indie games for well over a decade, and has most recently worked on two games that have become huge hits, Cobalt Core and a tiny little game called Minecraft. In this episode, we talk about how Aaron spent 14 to 15 years as a composer before he was able to go full-time, the importance of constantly creating work, even when you're not getting hired to work on projects, how to find your own musical voice as a composer, and so much more. So without further ado, let's get into the interview with Aaron Sheroff. So my first question for you is, I know you started music young, composing young, playing instruments, getting into the music thing when you were younger, but I'm curious to hear about that getting into it phase, because for a lot of kids, it's, we're going to take you to lessons, and then maybe you'll play a little, and that's kind of it, and then they quit at 16, and that's that. But there was some kind of shift for you where you started to be like, oh, I'm actually really enjoying this. And I want to hear about that kind of discovery.
Yeah, well, the shift for me was learning to compose. So I started playing, I was classically trained playing piano, and I started at age 6. And I come from a family where they encouraged like creativity and everybody should learn an instrument, everybody should be doing sports. But I really vibed with piano and I was pretty good at it. But I always got bored by like the stuff that I was learning. And eventually I just started goofing off when I should have been practicing. And that turned into discovering how to compose. So I started writing music, I guess, sort of officially like when I was 12. And I have some really old recordings of the stuff that I was composing when I was a 13-year-old that I recently rediscovered that is on my Bandcamp. It's called Computer Music 98, which is... like I did some computer camp and music camp stuff where I was playing with one of those Yamaha disc clavier workstation things. So I have like all these floppy disks of music that I was writing. And I'm really glad that I didn't discover it anytime in the last 20 years, because I probably would have found it like way too cringy to listen to. You hit that part in your teens when you're like, oh man, like I cannot bear to perceive anything that I did as a kid. But now it was like a time capsule for me to compare it to the work that I'm doing now and be like, oh, wow, you can totally see like where my musical trajectory started from, because I still have all of these Sheroffisms buried in my music that have not changed at all since I was 12.
That's so good. So I'm curious then, you mentioned the synclavier, but how was that kind of transition into digital music? Because when we were growing up, that wasn't a thing where people would give lessons on or anything. There's no YouTube. So how did that kind of come up for you when it came to writing music?
Yeah, so most of my practicing was done on a Yamaha Clavinova, which had like a disc system for it. So I pretty much was just playing piano or playing like electric piano or whatever basic synths that they had and recording that to a 3.5-inch floppy. And then I had like a dozen of these floppies that could only be read and played by the Clavinova. So they're unfortunately kind of lost to time now, but so much of what I was doing was just kind of inventing things and finding sounds that I liked and recording them. But I didn't really do anything with them until much later, like once I was in college and discovering Reason and GarageBand, where I started to discover that there were things that I could do beyond just playing around, like actually writing music. But for a super long time, I grew up with music as a passion, but I never really figured out how that could connect to a career. And when I was like graduating high school, I said, well, music's always been my passion, but there's all these other things that I'm interested in. Like I wanted to be a cartoonist. I wanted to be a journalist. I liked film. So I was just like shooting all over the place, figuring out what I could pursue as a career. And for music, the only thing that I was aware of as a career for it was performance. And I've never had any interest in performance. Like I get I don't know if it's anxiety, but I just don't like being on stage and performing. So I guess that's the definition of performance anxiety. But that was always my least favorite part of engaging with the piano, was performance. So I was like, well, if I can't go to college to perform, I guess music's out for me. So maybe I'll just go to college for something else, like writing. I grew up like writing poetry and essays, and I was always like a really avid reader. At some point, I was like writing for an online column, and I saw that as like a way for myself to sort of pursue a career. So I did that. I went to college. I started going to Boston University for their communications program. And this was in the early 2000s. And you may recall an invention that was really popping off at the early 2000s called the internet. As I started going to school for like print journalism, it turned out this thing called the internet was like devastating print journalism. And all of the college programming around what does journalism look like, they had yet to figure out how to adapt it for this new wave of technology that was coming to replace everything that had ever existed up until that point. So I was sort of bouncing around in the communications department at Boston University for a couple of years, thinking like, well, I always liked ads on TV when I was a kid. Maybe I could go into advertising. Writing for advertising or writing for, I guess, journalism's out. And then as an elective, in my second year, I took an electronic music production course. And that's when I discovered Reason and Digital Performer. And I'd never used any of them before. And I really connected with it. And it was really inspiring. And at the end of the semester, I thought I was doing like really cool work with it. And my teacher was like, you seem to have an aptitude for this. Have you ever considered going to school for this? And I was like, going to school for what? Because I'd never known that music production was a thing. Like, I guess I knew that there were people working in composition. Like, I grew up playing video games and I was hooked on video game soundtracks all throughout the 90s, but I never really knew like how to get into that industry. I never even recognized it as an industry you could get into. Maybe that was because I was playing like exclusively JRPGs for the most part. And I'm like, I don't know how to go to Japan and be a composer. So, but then, yeah, learning that it was an option that was available for me, I kind of had like a midlife crisis when I was 22, where I dropped out of BU trying to figure out what to do with my life. And I have like a very weirdly similar story to Rich, where I'm like, oh, I guess I'll just apply to Berkeley with no backup plan.
Right.
And for me, Berkeley, most of that decision was like, well, I'm already in Boston and I already have a sublease on the Green Line. I don't even have to change apartments. So yeah, I applied to Berkeley and I started going there and I had this like whole invigorated, like post midlife crisis thought about how I was thinking about like a music career where I'm like, well, now I really know what I want to do. And it's to go into music and do music composition. And so I was doing music production at Berkeley in, was it music synthesis when you were still there?
It was. It just changed when I was there, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I left right before it had changed. So it was music synthesis for the entire time I was there.
Nice. So while you were at Berkeley and you're kind of figuring this out, you had this like post-midlife crisis awakening, essentially. What was the kind of big discovery you made there beyond just, oh, this is a career? What other things did you discover of like, oh, maybe I could do game audio? Like, did that come up during Berkeley or was that afterwards?
That did come up at Berkeley, yeah. So I was kind of like out of touch with games for a little bit. But then once I started going to Berkeley, this was like the mid-2000s, and I had just become aware of indie games through Xbox Live Arcade. And specifically Braid was the breakthrough title for me, learning about, oh, there are non-Japanese game developers who are making smaller titles. And I saw like Braid as like the prototypical example of the type of game that I would like to work on. And that was actually like kind of the crux of my senior project at Berkeley was I took the Mac port of Braid and I like decompiled it, wrote a completely different soundtrack and recompiled it with a unique soundtrack that was like a
awesome
dynamic interactive audio. And I was like, this will be like a prototype for how I want my career to look like. And there was a couple of like courses at Berkeley that were sort of around game design and making music for games. But I'd be curious to know like how that program has changed over the years, because it was definitely like most of the professors I was talking to were not very involved in it yet.
Yeah. Totally. And, you know, you did that really cool project. And I'm sure as soon as you graduated, you moved to Seattle and everything was fine, right? Like, that's exactly what happened. And, like, that was no problem. So tell me about those steps, because I think the big misconception a lot of people will think, like, oh, he went to Berkeley, so he was just fine immediately after. But I want to hear of what it was actually like.
Yeah, so it was not exactly like a Cinderella story or anything. So this was like the late 2000s. And I graduate, and I'm like, well, I know a lot of stuff happens on the West Coast. I've never lived in Seattle before. I've never even been, but I visited once and fell in love with the area. And then I met a lot of people who worked around the game industry here. So I was like, Seattle seems cool. I'm just going to move here and figure it out. And then I moved here and I was like, well, I do need a day job. I do need some sort of income while I am establishing myself. So like a lot of people who went to college for creative pursuits in technology, I got a job at the Apple store. Yes. And so it was like, I was a Logic Pro trainer and I worked at the Genius Bar for a couple of years there while I was getting situated in Seattle. So like on top of this job in retail, I started going to like the Seattle Indies meetups and going to game jams, like the Molly Jam was one of the first ones I did. So I was doing a lot of like creative work in indie games just outside of my day job in retail. And eventually that kind of like led me to think, okay, well, you know, I could just keep moonlighting in game audio until I do something that really gets people to come to me. Because I was going to audio mixers, but I always had a really hard time at them because I couldn't shake this feeling of like, I don't like to enter any conversation with an ulterior motive. And for me, networking events had this sort of internal pressure where I'm like, okay, well, there is a part of me that recognizes that I have to go to these things in order to find work. But I was going to GDC and meeting all sorts of really cool and creative people, but I stopped doing that because I didn't want to enter any conversation with please hire me energy. And being at GDC, I was meeting like all these cool people who were doing amazing things. And it made me feel like I should just focus on this part of myself where I'm creating these things and building out my own kind of discography. And then I would have an easier time connecting at these networking things in the future if I have more to point at. So instead of like doing networking, I was like, the time that I spend doing networking, I can just write more music. So I was composing for small games alongside this day job. And like, man, it's kind of working out, but I would love more structure around my schedule. And then I eventually got like a desk job where at least I had like a really consistent 9-to-5. And for a lot of years, that was a really like serviceable balance for me where, okay, I have a predictable day job that isn't like totally stressing me out and killing me. And I still have this easily predictable free time that I can construct projects around. So like all of my nights and weekends were sort of turned into this studio errand time.
Yeah. And I guarantee there are people listening to this right now who are like, oh, okay, so you're 24 when everything hit big. I'm in my 30s, so I'm screwed. Like, that's the kind of mentality I hear a lot is people worrying, like, it hasn't hit in 2 years. Everything's over. Oh, my God. So tell me how many years that actually was.
Yeah. So I started thinking of myself as a composer in 2009 when I graduated from college. So that would have been 15 years ago this year.
Yeah, before you hit like full-time game audio.
Yeah, so I started full-time game audio last year after the Minecraft Trails and Tales update came out. So that would have been 14 years.
So what do you say to the composers who are, I see this every day of people saying like, it's been 2 years, it's been 3 years, I'm a failure. What do you say to them?
I think the only way to ensure that you won't find future success is to stop making things or to give up. I guess there's no guarantee that by staying in it that you will eventually come to find success, but you can for sure guarantee that you won't if you stop making things or if you drop out of the creative scene. So like I sure would have loved to be discovered and to start making higher profile things sooner. Maybe it's possible that I would have if I weren't splitting my time between a day job and this moonlighting career. But it's also hard for me to have a lot of regret around how things turned out if the choices that I made eventually led me to work on music for the biggest game in the world.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, so I think it was worth waiting for, even if it wasn't like the most clear-cut path that I was walking the whole time.
Now, during that arc, that 14, 15 years, were you ever thinking, man, it's time to just hang this up. This isn't working. Or were you confident the whole way?
Oh my God, no. I think everybody who does creative things has like ups and downs, especially if you're trying to pursue it as a career. So I think like my goals did have to change over time, because starting off, I was like, man, I would love to work on a huge game, or I would love to make games that get played. But there's so much luck that goes into picking the right projects or finding the right people. And eventually, like, I found the most success. Most of what I've been telling people is the most inspiring thing, at least for me, was to find people to collaborate with that inspire you to create your best work. It's definitely harder for me to stay motivated if I'm just making things for myself, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to work in games. Was I've always loved soundtracks, even film scores, video game scores. I always like music as a thing that serves another story or another purpose. At one point, I really wanted to go into work writing jingles for commercials. But sadly, like the 90s jingle-based economy for commercials sort of fell by the wayside. So even if I knew how to break into it now, which I still don't, I don't even think that work exists anymore except for State Farm. but yeah, so like the thing that really set things in motion for me was Sunshine Heavy Industries, which the trajectory that led to that was, so for a lot of years, I was like, okay, well, I'm working on small indie games around the Seattle area, or working online, or working on game jams. I've never really done an album for myself. I would like to do that. And so I put out an album in 2015 called Anagnorisis. And I think because I had been on the Fez remix album, FZ side F, Fez side F. I don't know how you pronounce it. I've never said it aloud.
I have no idea.
But most people knew of me through my Nocturne remix that was on that. And so some people, like through whatever the algorithm looked like back then, like discovered Anagnorisis, including this artist online called Daisy Owl, who was just this random person on Twitter who kept saying nice things about my music, like over and over and over again. And at a time in my career where I didn't really have much of a following, it was really impactful for me to be like, this is the first person that I don't directly know who is resonating with my music. And it meant a lot to me. And then when I checked out his profile at one point, it said he did game design. So I just cold called, DM'd him. And I was like, hey, thanks for all the nice words about Anagnorisis. Let me know if you'd ever like to collab on something. And that started a now 7-year collaboration where he did some album art for me at one point. Then we did a game jam game called Moment to Midnight, which the soundtrack for that is like weirdly popular on Spotify now. But we did Moment to Midnight, and then that went really well. And he's like, I have an idea for a full game here. And then it was a 2-person duo between like me creating music and him creating everything else that turned into Sunshine Heavy Industries. And eventually we brought on John as like an additional designer. But it didn't really like pop off in any kind of major financial sense, but it was definitely like the most notable game that I had worked on to that point that was like finding an audience, because it had this sort of puzzle design, Zachtronics. It had a really bizarre elevator pitch that was, it was like a Lego creative sandbox where you're creating ships for different clientele and you're trying to make them efficiently. It's like impossible to describe it in 45 seconds. And it has like very little conventional appeal to it, I think. I mean, I think the game is great, but I've never been able to sell people on it. But also I'm the composer, so I don't have to. So that part's not my job. But I started like noticing that people were discovering me through then Sunshine Heavy Industries. And that's what eventually led to me getting a message through my Bandcamp form from Mojang being like, hey, we're looking for composers for the next update to Minecraft, and we found you through Sunshine Heavy Industries. And I was like, this is a scam. This is the most indie game specific catfishing attempt that I've ever been exposed to. Like, I'm sure you tell people all the time, like, yeah, we're hiring for Minecraft. Come compose for Minecraft. But that's genuinely what it was. And I was like, I guess I should follow up on this thing. And it turned out to be legit. So imagine my surprise.
Right. Yeah. Which is just absolutely wild. But there's something so important you mentioned there where you never really stopped making stuff, even if it didn't pop off. Not all of it necessarily did. But there's this kind of mindset where people would think, and I understand why, of like, well, clearly you had a trillion followers by the time Minecraft reached out to you. But that doesn't seem to be the case. You just had a kind of back catalog of things you're consistently making.
That was the thing that I think was the biggest tipping point for them reaching out was like, well, they discovered me through Sunshine Heavy Industries. And then when they looked me up more, they were like, oh, this dude has done like close to 20 projects and has demonstrated an ability to deliver things and actually finish them. And finishing things is really like the most important part of being a creator, because it's fun and easy to have ideas. I love having an idea and I love like messing around and just freestyling on the piano. But finishing that idea and turning it into something is legitimate work, no matter how much of a hobby it is. And that's where people start falling off of the hobby wagon, where like it's, and I mean, it could be perfectly fine if music is a hobby for you. Like, you do not have to monetize every hobby that exists. But if you want to do it as a career, there is an aspect of it that you have to be able to treat it like a business and think of it as a business. And being able to finish projects is pretty much the only important thing that matters at the end of the day.
Yes, 100%. Because I'm sure the people at Mojang are just like, heads will roll if this does not get finished. So we need someone who's not going to flake, who's not going to disappear. Please, God, we need that one composer.
Yeah. But the most crazy thing in retrospect for that project, for doing Minecraft for me, was that I did not quit my day job. I did that soundtrack on top of a 40-hour-a-week job where I was also like getting promoted at my day job at the same time. Like, I wasn't phoning it in or taking sick time either. Like, as I was doing it, I definitely hit a point where I'm like, it's worth making it work this one time, but this is obviously not sustainable in the long term. I guess backing up a little bit more. So I ended up in kind of like working in software documentation. So the day jobs that I've had for like the better part of the last 10 years was writing technical manuals and knowledge base articles. And like, it's a weird way of looping back to the career path that I initially had at Boston University, where I'm like, I guess I like writing. And it turned out I was pretty good at technical writing, which is just explaining technical concepts in layman's terms. And I was like, this is not only am I pretty good at this, and I sort of find it enjoyable on some level, but I see a path I could potentially just keep doing this and then have a creative career on the side until whatever future point where it makes sense to try to switch over. And as Minecraft was reaching out to me, I was like, I guess this is the closest thing to a major breakthrough that I will ever have in my career. So this will be the time to make it work. But it's funny that I spent so many years thinking about like a day job in the tech industry as this is a source of stability, because the tech industry is always hiring. It's always doing awesome. And last year is when they started having like historic layoffs across the entire industry. And I mean, this is also the case in the game industry too, right? But everybody's getting laid off right and left. And the weird like rock in the middle of my life that was like the one foothold that I could stand on was that my hobby had now turned into doing music for Minecraft. And so as this like day job ecosystem around me is crumbling away into dust and there's an axe hanging over my head, I'm like, man, I wish I could just focus on this one career moment of doing music. And it felt like an amazing ace to have in my sleeve for the moment where, well, you know, maybe it doesn't matter if everybody's getting laid off, because I now have this moment of synchronicity where if I were to suddenly be laid off and have a ton of free time, I not only have Minecraft coming out to bank on, not like financially, but just like as a thing that makes me known as a creator, which it certainly did. But also Cobalt Core was about 18 months in development at that point. And I'm like, I would actually love to work on this full time for the next 6 months, because that had just gotten picked up by a publisher as well. And I'm like, I want to make this soundtrack the best thing that I possibly can. And after working in the periphery of game audio for so long, I have this sense of like, I kind of can't count on anything, or at least a sense that like, there's no sure guarantee that whatever I have in this moment is going to exist in the next. So like, all I know right now is that Minecraft just happened and that I have an opportunity to work on the biggest game soundtrack that I may ever get the chance to own in my life, which is the Cobalt Core soundtrack. So I really threw everything I had into it and every idea that I'd been sitting on since I started composing. And I'm like, well, even if this is the last thing that I get to do, I want to be really proud of it. And I'm really glad I ended up making that decision and sticking with the idea of going full time on it, because I had opportunities to get back into a technical writing career or stay on with the company that was splitting off. But I've always wanted to work in music. And if this wasn't a moment to make it, or at least try to make it happen, like, I don't know what I would be waiting for.
I'm really curious of how your mindset has shifted since then, because I'm sure there was worry, because like you said, there's no guarantee of anything, especially as a freelancer. Now that that's Cobalt Core, Minecraft, huge successes, those are done. Now, where's your mindset at? Is it, okay, now what do I do? Do you have a clear plan? Like, it took 14 years to get to this point, so your mind's probably kind of baked in a certain mode. So how have you kind of gotten out of that mode?
Yeah, it's been an interesting brain reset for sure. Because part of what appealed to me about having a day job in the first place was a sense of stability. But you have to take risks at some point in order to get anywhere. And life is boring without risk. And I had enough stress and ups and downs, even in a day job, that it wasn't like 100% the thing that I wanted to do. So I'm like, well, even if things are more inconsistent or less concrete going forward, I'm spending my time so much differently working in a field that I'm like 100% passionate about and not 75 or 80 or 85%. And also I have so much more creative ownership and satisfaction from the work that I do as a musician than I ever had in documentation, because I thought I did great work describing software in text, but at the end of the day, like, I could be replaced by any other writer and no one would ever know. But the work that I was doing on Cobalt Core and Minecraft, I felt was such a unique representation of the things that I create and my own sensibilities that, like, if I didn't do it, it wouldn't exist. And so I am able to have so much more satisfaction from having done it.
You mentioned something earlier where you listened to those old floppies and you could even find the Sheroffisms, and that seemingly has continued because you have your own style. And a lot of composers who are kind of newer, they don't have that voice just yet and they don't know how to develop it. They have no idea how to, like, find their Sheroffism equivalent. So what do you tell them? Like, how do they practice that? How do they discover that? What do they do necessarily to get that?
Well, I think the most important audience that you need to be writing for is yourself. I mean, I know that there are ways to attract an audience or, like, be hustling and developing, like, a listener base, because I know other artists do it, but I've never known how to do it. And I feel like I don't know how to make other people care about the work that I do. So at the end of the day, all I really should be focusing on, or at least first and foremost, is making something that I enjoy listening to. There's such a gulf between the ideas that you have and your ability to execute them, that when you're starting off, it can be really discouraging and difficult to not just hear the mistakes or everything that's wrong with a piece of music that you work on. But this applies to every trade. Like, I've tried learning how to draw. I've tried a bunch of different things, but it applies to all creators where, like, it takes a lot of, like, thousands of hours to become fluent enough in something where you can start to have fun with it. And that playing around is where you kind of discover what it is you like about the thing that you're doing. And so for the first few years of writing music, like, I would finish a song and I would, like, throw off my headphones and shelve it away, upload it to MySpace, and be like, I never want to hear this ever again. And then so my goal early on became, I just want to be able to listen to the music that I work on and not just hear all of the flaws in it. And this started happening, like, when I was at Berkeley, where I discovered Logic for the first time, and I was playing around with so many different tools, but Logic was the closest that I had come to being able to capture an idea that I had and give it form through this DAW and make something where, like, I could listen to the music and actually enjoy it. And as for, like, honing that into a sound, it helps to expose yourself to as much media as possible and, like, put yourself outside of your comfort zone in terms of, like, what you like to listen to, but also think, like, really pragmatically around, like, well, what are my interests and what am I most passionate about? I grew up listening to truly dorky music, like video game soundtracks for one, when I turn on the radio, I listen to smooth jazz. And I listen to like George Winston, like New Age Piano, like Wyndham Hill, those records. And those guys eventually like went on to do film scores, which is kind of makes sense in retrospect. But at the time I was like, I love video game music. I like the build mode music from The Sims. And all of my other sensibilities are really dorky, but it's what I'm most passionate about. But then like, as I was discovering music more online in the early 2000s, I felt like there was all these depths to the world that I had never discovered before. Like I started listening to hip hop for the first time. Like I discovered it through KEXP streaming online, DJ Shadows introducing. And that blew my head open. I'm like, there's such a world to interesting music production that I'd never conceived of before. And the only way to like really kind of expose yourself to it is to throw yourself in as much as possible. So for years, I was listening to like almost exclusively instrumental hip hop, like New Jabez and Fat John. And when I was in Boston, I had like a show at a radio station at Northeastern University, WRBB, where all I played was like funk, soul, and hip hop. And I didn't know anything about these genres, but I was like, I really want to learn about it. And for me, the most effective way to learn things is to have a deadline and I have to find 2 hours worth of music to showcase every week. And that was an effective goal for me to ingratiate myself into learning about all these other worlds of music. And even though like I don't technically write hip hop or anything, but when I started writing music, all of the stuff I was doing was like hip hop beat oriented. And the reason why I eventually moved into piano was actually kind of like music rights based. I didn't want to get sued over using samples. So I'm like, well, I guess I kind of know piano still. So maybe I'll leverage that with hip hop beats. But over time, like every couple of years, I try to like find a new genre to get into. Like I discovered, oh man, Kate Bush is amazing. And in the late 2010s, I got like really obsessed with library music, which is essentially like the 70s and 80s version of stock music. Where right. It'd be pressed to vinyl, but like music for film and television by these publishing houses. But you would get an LP that'd be like Electromagnificence. And all the cuts on the back would be like, it would tell you exactly how to use it, like light and airy, breezy guitar riff. So like if you were making like a television show, you could write it for that. But I love listening to cheesy stuff. And it's like genre-based listening where I'm like, oh, I'm going to listen to up-tempo music for sailing today.
You know, the thing everyone says.
Yeah. But like, for me, like artistically honing in has also been a process of finding unique things to become like hyper fascinated by and then reflect through my own music in some form or another. And I kind of learned this doing remixes too, but like, even if I were to try and do an unironic one-to-one remake of someone else's song, it's always going to be filtered through this lens of my own sensibility that makes it mine. And I guess if you do that enough, you start to learn about yourself and the type of music that you want to create, and that helps you develop your own kind of sound. So for me, I know my sound is very much like creating music on piano. Everything I write is based around piano, hyper melodic. I'm obsessed with motif and melodies. Yeah, so I guess I write like minimalist ambient music, but also like hyper maximalist electroacoustic prog jazz fusion stuff. It's quintessentially like video game music. And I struggle to describe it beyond that. But for someone who had a job for years explaining concepts in layman's terms, you'd think I'd know how to describe my own music, but I don't. And I really lucked out that the sounds that I wanted to create ended up being so in the wheelhouse for what something like Minecraft was looking for.
Totally. And there's kind of a case to be made that you kind of discovered your sound just through trying stuff and making stuff and just shrugging and seeing what would happen, as opposed to thinking before, would this be marketable?
Oh, yeah. Like, I know you also have a background in OmniFocus and getting things done.
Yes.
So it's a productivity methodology by an author named David Allen.
Yeah.
But so one of the software that I worked on for years was this task management app called OmniFocus around this getting things done methodology. And like all methodologies, you kind of have to pick and choose parts of it that resonate with you or click for your own mindset. But the thing that stuck with me from that workflow was the idea that goals should be actionable. So using OmniFocus, this productivity app with an idea that goals should be actionable. So as you're creating goals for yourself as a creator, like, this isn't really a getting things done methodology thought, but I kind of supplement, like, what is the difference between a goal and a dream? Where for me, a lot of years, it's my dream to become a full-time music composer. But that in and of itself is not really actionable. There are so many steps that require external input or external forces to complete. Whereas a goal could be something like, I want to release this soundtrack, or I want to release this album and ignore us. Like, okay, this is an album. It's 12 tracks. I can break that down into actionable steps where I'm still able to, like, know what stands between me and doing this thing. Whereas a goal like, I want to win Best Composer at the Game Awards, is so externally motivated and essentially requires, like, the entire rest of the game industry to stop existing in order to be successful. So it's cool for that to be a dream, but, like, having steps along the way that are, like, actionable goals and projects that you can work on where you can stay motivated by being able to complete things. Like, I'm going to work on a small game, or this next project I'm going to do without using piano at all, or this next one, I've never written up-tempo music before. I'm going to do an entire game soundtrack that's all, like, really high energy beats. So those are the goals that I found most helpful for myself along the way in, like, staying productive in doing music while also still having dreams of, like, I would like to do this full time.
You mentioned earlier that you would do things like listen to hip hop or the library music records, you know, just all these sorts of places to learn from. And I'm curious what your kind of equivalent of that is today. Like, what's your odd Aaron learning kind of curriculum, even if it's not music related at all?
Oh, man. So the thing that I'm adapting the most to is this idea that I have free time, where for so many years, like, music was, it was a side path for sure, but it was still a hobby. So all of my free time went towards making music for games. So now that I'm doing music ostensibly as my full-time career, I'm like, wait a sec, what am I supposed to do in the evenings and weekends now? So I'm like reconnecting with this part of myself where I have interests outside of just doing music for indie games. And a lot of that has been, like, I grew up really loving film, and I'm trying to recapture my love of film and expose myself to. There's so many historic movies that have come out over the last 100 years. I started getting into, like, watching Harold Lloyd's silent comedies. We got a subscription to the Criterion channel. So I'm like, if it's going to come out on Criterion, sure, I'll check it out. Even if it's a movie I've never heard of, it's a great way to see what the world has and what other creators have made that, like me, maybe, like, were made and didn't find a huge audience, but still have some sort of significance and resonance that can be related to today.
Man, that's awesome. And now there's a question that I ask everyone who comes on here near the end of a recording, which is, when you first started out, and that could be when you first started playing piano, it could be when you first went to Berkeley, whatever starting point you want to decide, what was your definition of success? And how has that changed over time? And what is that definition now?
Oh, man. Yeah. So that's changed for sure. I mean, I think success for me at the beginning was, like, I would like to work in games full time. Or it may have been even more kind of higher level, externally motivated than that. I was like, I want to be a famous composer. But over time, I realized that, like, I really started to do that thing where I'm trying to hone more of my goals towards things that are within my realm of ability to accomplish under my own power. So it would turn into, like, I want to work on an indie game. And then so I got into game jams, and then I'd say, oh, well, I'd like to get paid to work on a game. And then so through the connections that I made through doing game jams, I managed to find commercial work and started working on some iOS games that I got paid for. And then I was like, well, yeah, then maybe I'll do, like, a linear album as a goal. But it was a lot of really short-term, smaller scope goals that I could realistically do within a year or a couple of years and keep track of my own progress towards. But now that I'm doing it full time, I think a lot of my ideas of success are, like, how do I turn this into something that is long-term sustainable, but also allows me to reconnect with parts of my life and the people around me that I haven't been able to give my full attention to over the years. So for a while, yeah, success for me was this idea of being able to do music full time. But this year, the way that I'm feeling right now is kind of like, while I have this moment where I'm able to do it full time, I would also like to be there for my family and be there for my friends and be a part of the community and be more involved in the lives of the peers around me while also contributing to this world of game audio.
Beautiful. Now, last question, where can people find you? Plug anything you want.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can find me at sheroff.com, C-H-E-R-O-F as in Frank.com. Not really on Twitter. I am theoretically on Blue Sky, but remains to be seen. Mostly it's mostly my website, which also links to Bandcamp, but that's where it's all at.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time today. This is beautiful.
Yeah, this has been so much fun. Thanks for having me.
That's the end of today's episode. Thank you so much for listening, as always. And considering I work in the world of video game music and sound, and so many people are always asking me how they break into that field, I have a newsletter set up for you. So if you want to learn how to make music and sound effects for video games and actually be paid to do it, just go to bit.ly/soundbizpod. Sound, B-I-Z, pod. And that newsletter will set you up with 2 free courses and a bunch of free ebooks and even sound effects. They'll get you set up and teach you how to work in the world of video game music and sound. Thanks so much. I'll see you next time. And if you're looking for more audio-related podcasts to listen to, this podcast is actually a part of the Audio Podcast Alliance, featuring a hand-picked selection of the very best podcasts about sound. So if you want to check those out, hear the latest episodes from our friends in the community at audiopodcast.org.